Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle, and you know us. We are your people dashboard company for small and medium businesses. So what does that mean exactly, small and medium businesses? Well, we typically think companies between 50 and 1,000 employees. Enough employees where you really want to understand the data and understand what does my workforce look like from a data-driven perspective. But a lot of the times you have messy spreadsheets that you're pulling from a lot of different systems and you don't have the time, energy, or resources to ever get that reporting done. But look no further because now we have Employee Cycle here to the rescue. Go to employeecycle.com, learn how our people dashboard connects to all of the best systems that you're all using. Zenefits, ADP, TriNet, Bamboo HR, Namely, Sapling, you name it, to be able to pull all your data into one place to view, track, share, and analyze your metrics together. But that is enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today we have an awesome guest. So please help me welcome to the show, Lisa Dahlenbach. She's the Chief People Officer at Silverline. And today we're going to discuss how to use people data to better understand your remote workforce. Lisa, welcome to the podcast.
Lisa, happy to be here. Thank you. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for participating. And we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how, which is asking you, Lisa, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
At the time, 15 years ago, I was working on client accounts at an advertising agency, and I organically often participated in and had ideas and things about building our culture and bettering the way we were building our skill sets for our teams and employees. And after doing that quite a bit as my side job, they asked me to formally come in and help them. We were building out the New York office at the time at Digitas, come in and help them build out the L&D functions, which we then scaled nationally. And then from there, I added the HR and recruiting remit a few years following. I really thought I would help them build it out and go back. But what I realized was that when you're in the HR and the people roles, you're really, the brand you're building is the organization you're working for and supporting. And my clients are my employees, and my job and my team's job is to really set them up for success, whatever that looks like. So it's been a great journey ever since I made that pivot. So it was about 15 years ago.
Awesome. And I don't know if you know this, but I actually used to work at Razorfish. So I know the Digitas world very well.
Our beloved sister company, seriously.
Exactly. So can you give the audience a quick summary about Silverline? How many employees? Where are you based? And what does your company do?
Sure. So we are a Salesforce partner, and we primarily focus in the HLS and the FIN, so health and financial services space. So to really boil that down, anytime a customer decides to take on or buy the Salesforce licenses in those two verticals, we are one of the partners that that Salesforce recommends, and they look to us to help them build out and customize their solution. So it's cloud solutions and CRM and data. We are based in New York City, although our organization is, and this was pre-pandemic, is about 75% remote already. So we're all over the country. And then we also have an offshore office. Our great colleagues in India, we have about 30 people there. So we're about 300 in total. Our organization is about 10 years old.
Awesome. And thanks for that. So today we're discussing how to use people data to better understand your remote workforce. And you know, anytime we're going to talk about HR and people data, that's a special place in my heart.
Lights
you up. That's what we do. It does. But I first want to talk about what is your current status when it comes to your remote workforce. Are there specific roles? Do you have people remote all over the country, or are they in different places where you have a hub? So maybe they're remote, but they go inside of a WeWork or somewhere. What does that look like so we can get a better understanding of what do you mean by remote?
So they are literally remote, working from home or whatever space they choose. They are all over the country, including we even have one employee in Hawaii. We're always trying to book meetings with him in person. That's a joke. Can't do that. So they are literally, we don't use too many WeWorks, although once in a while we will. And what I have done is taken a look at, especially as we've grown, to understand where we've got little clusters of people, right? So I define a cluster as anyone more than seven. So in Florida, we've got about 15 of our silver liners. In Chicago, we have about 15. We've got about maybe 10 in LA in that area. We've got a handful in the Nashville area. We've got a handful in the Albuquerque area. And so when I see a cluster in a group, I get them together and I get a lead of the cluster. And I try to really connect with them and work with them to see how they want to feel connected and experience the Silverline culture and what we're doing in the organization, both from a literal business perspective, but then also culturally, how they want to shape and sort of run different things out of their cluster areas. So some of the groups, Chicago does have some WeWork type of space that they go into and meet up at a couple times a month. I think our Atlanta group does as well, but it really is driven by what they want to do and what feels right for them as a group.
And speaking of culture, was Silverline originally founded with a remote first culture, or at some point did it just make sense to allow people to have this flexible work schedule to be able to work from anywhere?
No, we've always been this way. And, you know, our thought is if you can do the role, I mean, it's from a recruiting perspective as well. There's great talent all over the country and you really limit yourself when you have to be very geocentric and say, I can only take the talent and find them in Chicago or, and it always tends to be the expensive markets. And so we've always said that, you know, where the talent lies, that's where we'll hire them. Now there are some roles, that are required to be, you know, our IT, our services, our executive team, but even one on the executive team is based out of Chicago. He travels in quite a bit. And then they travel to the clients based on the roles. So we've just always had the perspective that where the talent lies is where we'll hire them. And we've always focused everything right from the very start, from our onboarding and how we connect and engage as teams. We're big Slack users to connect, that you can do that. And we've certainly proved that out in spades during the pandemic as well. Things that we used to go on site with clients that we're doing remotely as teams. We've really done some great work there. So that's just how our organization has always been.
And so before we start diving into the types of people data that you want to track and manage better, are there things that you inherently want to know or need to know about remote employees that are totally different and that we might not think about if you were in the office? Or the things that you want to understand about remote employees are pretty much the same?
That's a good question. There's some differences. I mean, I think the things you always want to know about employees, you know, but I don't like to use data for it too much because I'd rather use our leaders and performance managers. Are people being productive? Do they have what they need to get the job done? And that, to me, I'm not sure data answers that question yet. There may be ways it can. And I'm hoping as an HR industry, we continue to look at that. But for now, I look at that as our leaders need to understand that. I think from the remote perspective, I really want to see how data can help us understand, are they connected? Are they engaged? What does that look like? What are the data points that would show me that they're not and that would show me that they are and what they need more of and less of? And some of them can't even articulate it. So I think coming to a solution there from a data perspective, to me, seems challenging. And I think I'm hoping that given I think many organizations will become more remote and stay remote after the pandemic, that maybe that is something that from a data perspective, we as an industry start working on to really understand that more than, you know, the conversational types of things. You know, I work a lot with our, as I said, our hub leaders, so to speak, and one-on-one. But as you scale, that's not possible. You know, you can't get to all those one-on-one conversations. So that's where I think the data it can come in and play a great role for us to understand how to support them and connect them and ensure that they're experiencing the same employee experience that someone might at a home office, so to speak.
So if we were to look at the entire employee lifecycle and that journey from start to finish, what are some of the top milestones or inflection points in areas where you would really want to measure and use data to exponentially better understand your remote employees?
That's a great question. The first one would be in recruiting, in that point where they make the decision to come with us or not. So data would be really interesting there to help us understand that. I think then when employees do decide, for those in that journey to come with us, those that once they're enrolled, say 4 or 5 months, I think that's when it gets to be so challenging, whether you're a new employee anywhere, right? If things really start piling up, you're really getting enrolled, but you're still new. And that's really a point I try to watch with all employees because, you know, the first couple of weeks, everybody knows you're new, but 4 or 5 months in, people forget and you're really into the work. And so having data help there, again, remote or non-remote, and to understand what people need and how they're doing would be great. And then that point, I think the third inflection point that's so important is when people get to be enrolled 18 months, 2 years, so to speak, when they're ready to probably do something else and they're starting to kind of think about what's next. So again, these are things right now that we really rely on our people leaders to really be very connected with their teams and help us understand that and come back and work with the HR team to understand who needs new roles and assignments and is ready to grow, whatever that might be. So that would be such an interesting place to me because again, as you scale, it's just so challenging from a numbers perspective. I also think there's something interesting about when you look at attrition. I think we always look at attrition, people that leave, but how can you take data to understand those that don't leave, what is driving them to stay, right? So then you can go replicate that in other places. And we can do some of that now. That's kind of simplistic, but there's a deeper way to take data to understand that, to manage talent, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. So it sounds like for you, the places where you really want to dig deep are around recruiting, and then some flavor regarding retention and turnover.
Yeah.
And so if we started with recruiting, what would you like to see and what would you like to better understand in regards to recruiting when it comes to remote employees?
I'd love to compare that to the on-site to understand for those that don't take the roles, what are the different points in there that drove to that decision and those that do take the roles and join us, right? So is it about the work? Is it about compensation? Is it about that they're remote? Is it about the culture? How can you start to take data and add that up to see what is it that is really pushing the decision points, again, that they either come with us or they don't, so that we can be smarter and more targeted, frankly, in our recruiting process. And, you know, we might have a great culture and think that's coming through, but if it's not, well, we might be able to see that better in the data and understand that more. You know, I think so many times, I work with a lot of the hiring managers to help them understand, you know, the market's competitive and we have to really, as much as we are, quote, interviewing candidates, they're interviewing us and they're interviewing a lot of people and all the things that are so great about our organization, we've got to really make sure we're showing that and really highlighting our total brand. So I think data could help us understand, are we doing that or not?
Are you currently doing those post hiring or recruiting surveys?
We don't.
Okay.
Which would be a very simple place to start. Yeah.
Right. And the reason why I asked, because I figured that could be a place to start. And for all the listeners out there,
yeah,
it seems as though post-interview, and I know certain systems do it, certain systems don't, but to be able to get a pulse on why people decided not to go with you is definitely a great place to start as well.
Yeah. And it for us, it is a system. You know, and as you well know, all of a sudden you get into, all right, well, I use this ATS for the hiring and I've got this system for the HRIS and I've got another survey I'm sending out, which is not a reason to not do it. But it does, then you come back on the back end and you're trying to compile all the data and have it talk. And even, you know, you talk about this quite a bit, which I think is interesting. There's a lot of data out there that LinkedIn, Glassdoor, all those different platforms have. We haven't even begun to touch that. And I think there's probably a lot there that any of us could be using.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So when it comes to hiring, and I just want to be clear, are you talking about the entire hiring process? So are you talking about the first time they touch your brand and the employer brand all the way to onboarding, or are you specifically talking about the recruiting process?
That's a good question. I really look at the entire, I feel very strongly, I look at the entire process, and I feel very strongly that the minute a potential candidate has the first conversation with anyone on our team, often it's a coordinator setting up time for the interview, whatever that might be, that's the first moment they engage with our brand. So if I could go even deeper, like, so at a baseline, I'd love to have the information regarding why they go or no go with Silverline. But if you could have the data to understand along the way, the pivot points, like what makes them take that next conversation, what makes them continue to engage, that would be really helpful. Right. Right. Because there's that discovery phase all of a sudden where you're kind of checking out the organization and you're learning about the hiring manager. Then there's that phase that goes deeper. That's like literally from a skill set perspective and expectation perspective, what does the role require? Then you get into the, okay, right. Can I work remotely? What does that look like? Well, how do we get together as teams? All those really more granular factors, I think, that go into the decisions. And then there's all the compensation benefits that come right there at the end of the decision. So there's a lot of different points along the way. So baseline, I just would love to understand which out of all of those, culture, remote, compensation, the hiring manager, the entire process, the feeling of it, did you feel supported during the process? Was it easy? All those things, I think, would be important to understand so you can improve. Because otherwise you are guessing, right?
Yeah, I have a question which is related to this, but it's a little different. When people apply to remote jobs, Do you think they know what they're getting themselves into? Or do you think they just think, oh, this might be cool, I'll try it. And if it doesn't work, I'll go for another job?
A great question. I think most know what they're getting into from a work perspective. What I have seen is that many don't realize that that means you are working on your own by yourself every day for the most part. And that's really been underscored since the pandemic. But we've had people who said, gosh, I just really need to get out of my house. I'm working here all day. And, you know, and we try to support them and help them. Do they just need to go to a WeWorks? Do they need to just go to a coffee shop? So I think that's the biggest thing that I see is people that have not worked remotely before that take on these roles. Once you're in them and you really realize, like, you are not in the hallway chatting with somebody, you aren't having that water cooler conversation. That doesn't exist remote. It's hard. And that's another thing that is really important. How do you set up, whether it's through Slack, fun engagement channels, quick coffee breaks, how do you mimic that in-office banter and connectivity that is so important and part of the workspace? How do you mimic that from a remote perspective? So that, I would say, is the biggest thing that I find candidates can be surprised by. But otherwise, they know what they're signing up for. They know they're signing up for different types of schedule, no commute. If there's travel involved, fine. They know that piece.
And then what about, and for the sake of the interview, I'm going to combine retention and turnover. Mm-hmm. What do you want to see there? What types of data are you looking for to understand whether or not you have engaged remote employees, whether they feel connected to the workforce, and potentially projecting how long do you think they're going to stay?
Yeah, I think that the latter is such an important or interesting one to me. I think we do a decent job with, I think everyone has the typical attrition data, right? Why did you leave? And you're looking at tenure and you're looking at teams and levels where you're seeing it more of a spike. You know, that's one I watch quite a bit is those that leave in under a year, going back to the earlier part of this conversation to understand, are they supported when they get here? Because anyone who leaves in under a year, they started looking right a few months before that, which means something went kind of awry quickly in their experience here with us. But I think the proactive to understand those that stay and what are the dynamics and the consistencies we can see there to replicate to me is really interesting. And so far, we have not done, haven't prioritized that enough. You know, there's always so many other priorities going on. But to me, that's a really interesting place that I conceptually know what I want to look at there, but I have to imagine there's places out there and platforms and technology that I just don't even know about that could really help with that at a much deeper level.
Yeah, we've had customers tell us that they've manually done stay interviews through SurveyMonkey or other survey tools. I can't think of any HRIS systems or engagement systems that do stay interviews, but we've definitely seen them and we're a big fan and want to help customers look at that data because, to your point, it's okay to know why people left, but it's awesome to know why people stay. Because then those are the things that I'm assuming you would want to communicate.
Yeah, replicate. Yeah. Like this seems to be really working for this group and this is why. And then so the question, and I've done the stay interviews, but how do you do that at scale, right? For organizations that are thousands of people, you could do a survey kind of thing, but how do you get in there and really get some data to really understand that. I think it'd be really fun to look at that.
And then in regards to retention and turnover, are there any specific metrics in those areas that you believe are more tailored to measuring your remote workforce than the traditional retention and turnover metrics that you would use for your in-person and office metrics, although you believe those are pretty much the same?
I mean, the only metric that I would look closer or want to understand more deeply is leadership, because I think it, remote or not, people come and make the choice to come work with you because of that hiring manager and that leader, right? There's all sorts of other aspects of that decision to say, yes, I want to join this team, but it's the leader they're looking to that they're going to be working with every day. And that is the piece that becomes so critical always, but when you're remote, right, that connective tissue becomes increasingly important. And so that is something that I would like to really understand at a deep level when people go, what are the aspects of their leaders and the support they've gotten that either was good or were part of that decision to leave, because then I know really how to support my leaders. But it all comes back to like, how can I then support my leaders going forward, given our organization is largely remote.
And when it comes to metrics like span of control, when you're looking to see how many employees are managed by any manager, or I guess in the better way to say that is to make sure that no one manager has too many direct reports, is that an issue when it comes to remote work? Is that just something that is more in person, or it still requires the same amount of span of control? I think people say that you shouldn't have more than 7 or 8 direct reports. I may be totally messing that up, but I believe the number is somewhere there. Do you believe that things like that are still true when it comes to remote work?
I do. I don't think it matters. I mean, unless there's roles that are very functionary, very process oriented type of thing, very black and white, so to speak, I suppose you could have more and manage it. But I think whether it's remote or in person, if you have too many, you just can't manage it and drive that connectivity. And that piece is so important, whether you're on site together or remotely, and probably a bit more important when you're remote, because you just don't have that quick, like, hey, what's up, when you're getting coffee. How was your weekend? That's where you build that personal relationship. Some of those little just quick conversations in the hallway. Let's go grab a coffee. You don't have that remotely. So I do think those, if you have too many, you just can't keep up with it, remote or not. And probably a bit more difficult when it's remote.
And last question, for all those people out there listening to you that are really appreciating this conversation and is making them think a lot more deeply about how they're going to use data, whether it's just for HR, you know, workforce analytics in general, or it's to really manage their remote employees, if they don't remember anything else in this interview, what's the one thing that you would want them to remember and think about?
So I love that question, because it's something we haven't talked about yet at all. So while I'm really excited about what data and technology is going to help us do in the people in the HR world, which we haven't had before. I mean, if you look back, gosh, 6, 7 years, we didn't have all these options. In the end, it's a people, it's a human thing, right? I mean, HR should be, I don't love to even use the word HR. People is a human thing. And so that connectivity piece is so important. The data is so helpful to know where to drive the connections and where to underscore the human elements of everything that we do. So I just want to underscore that. I think it's so critical that while processes, we need that, we need data, we need analytics to understand and technology to be better at what we're doing, it's still a human thing. So how do we not lose that as we continue to leverage all these great tools and analysis abilities that we have that we didn't a few years ago? So it's a pretty exciting time to be in this field, but I feel it's so important to not lose the human element of it.
You heard it first. Use the data to understand where you need to go, but remember that you're still a person talking to another person. Lisa, thank you so much for being such an awesome podcast guest. Really appreciated this conversation, and I'm sure everyone listening to this will learn a lot. So thank you very much.
Yay! Thanks, Lisa. Enjoyed it. Enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah. Also, so where can people find you and Silver Lion online?
Find me on LinkedIn, Lisa Dallenbach. I'm there. Would love to connect.
Awesome. We'll definitely put your contact info in the show notes. So if this was the very first time you've listened to an Employee Cycle podcast, but you're dying to hear more and you just really love the format and the conversation, and you just, I don't know, maybe you like the sound of my voice. I would be shocked if that was why. But either way, please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to awesome podcasts. Also, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes to show that you care. Who doesn't want to know that you like what they're putting out in the world? And last but not least, all you people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.